thank you very much for coming to our presentation today. Just as a starter, when she introduced us, we are from the Office of Program Evaluation within the Inspector General's office. Within that office, we work in the cross-media division, which is kind of a division that looks at all the issues within EPA that are just not central to air, land, or water, but the intersection of those. So we've worked on children's health issues, climate change, environmental justice, and then this particular topic, pesticides. Just want to give you the full title for our report that we did within the cross-media division. So the report we did was EPA needs to comply with the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, I'll call it FIFRA from now on out, and improve its oversight of exported, never registered pesticides. As you can see, we're a part of a team of seven, so Copeland and I are here presenting today. I also want to acknowledge two of our other team members, Dr. Jeffrey Harris and Ms. Jerry Dorsey, who are in the audience, but several people worked on this project. Just a brief outline, go over the background, the purpose of our evaluation, and then I'll switch over to Kalpana, who'll go over our findings and our overall conclusions. So, when it comes to pesticides, what are the responsibilities and roles that the different federal agencies play? In particular, for food commodities and protecting our nation's food supply, we have EPA, the USDA, and the FDA. For setting pesticide tolerances, that's mainly EPA's role. They register pesticides. Any pesticide that's used in the United States needs to be registered, and through that process is how EPA gets information on those pesticides to figure out how safe they are and how much of that pesticide could be on a particular item before we eat it or anything with it. USDA pretty much enforces the tolerances for meat, poultry, and certain egg products. And then FDA enforces tolerances basically for everything else, including pesticides. So mainly what we'll talk about today will be the relationship between EPA and FDA. And also, just to pinpoint our next presentation, he's going to talk about FDA. So you'll see kind of like a relationship there, which is great. Oops, sorry. So focusing specifically on residues and tolerances, what are tolerances? What are pesticides that EPA, what are they looking for? The focus that EPA usually is, what EPA usually focuses on are registered pesticides. When they get the information, a manufacturer says, this is a product that I want to put out on the shelves. They send that information to EPA. EPA puts all that information into whatever database or whatever. Then they have all the information and they develop the specific level of that pesticide that could be on a particular food. What to keep in mind is when they say pesticide A can be used on an apple, then that is specifically for an apple, and that tolerance level is set for an apple. So it doesn't mean that you can go and use it on a grape, and that's something to keep in mind. That's one of the big portions or parts of setting the tolerance levels, because it's for that particular substance. Before allowing the use of a registered pesticide on a food crop, EPA sets a tolerance level for that specific food combination. So that's, I just wanted to highlight that because that's a very important fact. What the federal agencies do is try to mitigate risk. And so as long as they're doing their job, then we're helping to mitigate those risks. The risks that are posed from registered and canceled pesticides are mitigated through these tolerances. So as long as the tolerances are set and they're being enforced by FDA, then it seems like the system is working and it should work. But if residues are found at a level above the EPA tolerance, then we have FDA's role coming in to make sure that whatever that particular shipment that's being sent into our country is stopped. That's how the relationship works. EPA sets the tolerance levels, FDA enforces those tolerance levels at the border or wherever to make sure that products that are over that tolerance level do not come into our country. That's how the relationship should work. You know where we're going with this. So in particular, the statute that EPA is using to control pesticide distribution, sale, and use is FIFRA. Within FIFRA, it says all pesticides must be registered. EPA does not evaluate the safety of unregistered pesticides intended solely for export. So highlight that. If a manufacturer says, I'm going to use this pesticide to export outside of this country, EPA does not get any information on the risks that go along with that pesticide. Say it again. Unregistered pesticides, EPA is not getting information on it. But we are saying, hey, we can ship this pesticide somewhere else. FIFRA Section 17A is what we focused on for our report, and that requires that for each unregistered pesticide that is exported, the person who is purchasing that product receives a statement that says you're receiving a product that is not used in the United States, cannot be used in the United States. They have to acknowledge that they're receiving a pesticide that's not registered or sold that cannot be sold in the United States. Hey, I'm sending you something that we don't use in the United States, but you can use it where you are. EPA is also required through the Section 17A to pass that information on to whatever that country is. So the heads of state in that particular country should get a notification that, hey, we're sending you a product that we said is not good enough to use here, but you can use it there on the foods that you might ship to us later. Unregistered pesticides are pesticides that are not registered for use in the United States. I know I keep saying this over, but, you know, it's a big thing to keep remembering. We cannot use them here in the United States. Of course, someone could use them illegally, but yes, they're not supposed to be used here in the United States. Canceled pesticides are ones that were once registered and we deem them no longer safe to be used in the United States, and then never registered are the ones that were never registered, hence the title. Both canceled and never registered pesticides can be manufactured here in the United States and exported abroad. So what's the point of all of this? One of the things I wanted to bring up was that I said that this is how the system should work. You know, EPA sets the tolerance level, and then those products are then shipped wherever. If they come back in, FDA should be able to catch that because they have the tolerance level. They can test for it and find it. One thing to note with how FDA tests, they don't test every shipment. It's a sample of products that are tested. So there's another potential for products to come in because only a sample is tested. Also, if they don't have information on these products because they're unregistered, maybe they won't be able to detect them. And Kupplinger will talk about that a little bit more later on. So a couple of months ago, I don't know if anybody saw the New York Times article, there was an article on pesticides, not for use on foods, but pesticides that were in this country and being used illegally. The reason why I always remember it, because the particular pesticide was called the cat will be unemployed. Really highly dangerous product. They found it on the shelves being sold in Chinatown. EPA did a raid and found several places in Chinatown that were selling products that were not supposed to be used in the United States. So there are definitely loopholes that exist, and our report hoped to close one of those. So to talk about our findings, I'm going to switch over to Kupplinger.
Hi, I'm Kupplinger Ramakrishnan, and I'm here to present some of the findings from our evaluation. We're only going to be highlighting a few of the things, and we're skipping the scope and methodology for the time reason. So Loretta already explained the reason for the foreign purchaser acknowledgement statement. So basically, if you're a U.S. manufacturer producing a pesticide and you'd like to ship it abroad, the importing facility must acknowledge and sign this FPAS and send it back to the U.S. manufacturer before that pesticide is exported. The manufacturer then forwards that on to the EPA. EPA is then responsible to send it to the foreign governments, the appropriate government officials. So that's the process. And what we wanted to look at was basically the second and third arrows was EPA receiving the universe of notifications, and was EPA forwarding the FPASs to the government officials? So what did we find? We found that EPA can't assure manufacturer compliance of FPAS notifications. Basically, when a manufacturer produces a pesticide, FIFRA requires them to register their establishment as being a pesticide-producing establishment. So EPA tracks this. They already have an automated internal system tracking these pesticide producing facilities. So what we looked at was EPA reconciling their information with this automated database? And we found that no, they were not doing that. The second step was, were they forwarding the FPASs to the government officials? And again, no, less than 3% of all FPASs received in 2007 were actually forwarded. The ones that were forwarded were for one specific pesticide, and that was for carbapura. The other, so basically, we have eliminated FIFRA Section 17A, EPA lacks compliance of this statute, and they basically left certain foreign governments potentially with the risk of having hazardous unregistered pesticides being imported into their countries without their knowledge. So this is a map of 2007 FPASs that were received by EPA and who we should have been sending out, which countries we should have been sending to the government officials. The top six countries are Canada, Mexico, Panama, the UK, Switzerland, and Germany. Germany is not highlighted because it received, EPA received 97 FPASs. The ones in red, EPA received 100 or more. And this, there's a map in the back that we forgot to include this map, but basically the top importers for 2007, according to USDA, were Canada and Mexico. The top aggregated country was the European Union. But the next two countries were Canada and Mexico, from which we import foods. And those are also the top. So we can't really say cause and effect, but we wanted to highlight that. Specifically for never registered pesticides, for unregistered pesticides, Laura already mentioned they could be canceled or they're never registered. Canceled pesticides, FDA and USDA already have some information on the hazards and risks. But for never registered pesticides, there's no information on the hazard, the human health hazards, or the environmental hazards. So, and this is important for us because EPA needs to transfer this information to FDA and USDA so that they can actually detect the pesticide residues. However, EPA was collecting a very limited amount of data on their FPASs, and it limits their ability to track and monitor the pesticides. So if EPA could actually track these and know where the pesticides were going to be going, what foods the pesticides are going to be used upon, then EPA could better inform FDA and USDA on which pesticides to look for. However, what we found was FPASs were missing some crucial information. They were missing information on the quantity and volume of pesticides that were being exported. They didn't have information on the commodity. They didn't have safety procedures. They didn't have analytical methods and reference standards, which are very necessary for USDA and FDA to actually monitor for these never registered pesticides. So this is crucial. This is a crucial link, missing link, and federal regulatory monitoring of never registered pesticides on the U.S. imports. So our overall conclusion was that EPA's current practices is not satisfactory to monitor and determine whether there is a potential re-entry of never registered pesticides on imported foods and or whether there is a dietary risk for U.S. consumers. And that is it. Does anyone have questions for Laura?
Do
I'll just go back this way. Go ahead.
That was a wonderful presentation. This is not my area of expertise, but I'm just wondering, with the never registered pesticides, are there, I can just sort of imagine that sort of, that there would be people out there trying to come up with sort of alternative pesticides, trying to do green different versions, whatever. And I'm just wondering, are there institutional sort of barriers or are there incentives for pesticides producers to register their pesticides, or is it a complicated process? Is it, do you know what I'm trying
to
get at?
Yeah, I think,
I wonder if sort of inadvertently there are people out there trying to, I live in Brooklyn, we're all about like gardens and whatnot, but you know, there are a lot of people that are really trying to do things that are off the beaten path. And now I'm sort of wondering if these guys are necessarily doing things that are sort of following the ETA, or they're registering these products, they're trying to do green and sort of more environmental or sort of holistic kind of stuff, and I'm wondering if the mechanism to kind of get these products registered, is it complicated, is it difficult, is it, are most sort of dismissed as sort of being, you know, what about that process?
Yeah, that's actually probably a whole nother report in terms
of the
registered process. But I would say that it's not difficult, and almost EPA registered serial number that you get is almost a brand and a thing that people would tend to see as something that this means it's okay. Whether that does mean it's okay, that's another report. But I think that is not the blockage. Actually, most people want to be registered. I think it might be the opposite. The ones that don't get registered, why is it that you want to create a product that they've already said that you think might not be able to be used in the United States? Why is there that loophole that it can be created? So I don't think there's anything blocking the whole green chemistry initiative, because I think there are a lot of manufacturers out there who are heading down that route and know that that is a very lucrative area. So to get registered, basically all you're doing is sending in your data. Nobody's saying that EPA is actually analyzing that data at this point. They are, but I'm just saying that it's not something that is a rigorous process.
And just one other thing I'd like to add is that it's registering chemicals, is pesticides or chemicals, so if they're a hazardous chemical, then that's the registration process. But if it's potentially green, or if it's something that's not chemically hazardous or known to be hazardous or toxic, then potentially. Go ahead.
I'm struck by the fact that the EU was a high recipient of NPASs, and yet we think of them as being the ultimate place where the precautionary principle is at play. How do you explain that?
Well, the way we were explained from the EPA, they said that a lot of these pesticides have their first primary destination, and then they're shipped out from there. So this was where we had a big block. So the UK might be importing a lot of never registered or unregistered pesticides, but then they're also shipping it outside. So they're possibly a hub, and then shipping it elsewhere, where you saw Panama and Mexico were also kind of
hubs. The same way that we ship out from the U.S. dangerous products, a recipient in the EU is shipping them on to low-income countries, et cetera.
Yeah, it could probably turn into like an Occupy Wall Street type thing. It's big business coming out to their distributors elsewhere, but, you know, using that initial hub and then deciding where they're going to send out from there. I mean, not saying that it's an easy job for EPA. It's definitely a difficult thing to try to watch where these chemicals are going and even knowing who's sending them out. But I think for the starter, for the FPAC, it seems like such an easy thing to track. But when we went and did our research, I mean, there's literally one guy with a file cabinet who gets these things and just like stuffs them in the file cabinet. And it's like, okay, what's the next step? You're supposed to like fold it up, put it in an envelope, and mail it out. So yeah, there's some steps missing.
Sorry, I'm just going to go this way. I don't know how much time we have, by the way, but okay.
I just wanted to clarify the point you're making. So there's certain pesticides, bad chemicals that we can't use here in the United States. So they can be exported elsewhere. They can use them on their food, and then they're imported back here to our grocery stores and we eat them. Am I right?
With the barrier being that we have tolerance levels that are set so that when they're being shipped in, FDA will detect those chemicals and say whether or not they are at the tolerance level. So the next step would be that we hope that FDA is able to catch those products that have a higher level than they should on them. So there should be a barrier in there that would keep those products from coming in. But of course, as we said, they test a sample of products. They're not testing all of them. So not trying to say cause and effect, that we used to call it like the circle of doom, that there's some circle of doom going on. But we're just saying that there's the potential for that. And if at least countries know what's being shipped to their countries, maybe they could have more information on these products and that they're dangerous. Because at least having the data is probably a big part of it. So if you're shipping something that we don't have the data on to someone else that may not have the institutional knowledge to have, you know, to develop that data also, do we know what they're using it on? No. How do we know, okay, we should watch grapes coming from whatever country because we have no information on what they're actually using those pesticides on. So.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Really good question. If it's not registered, how would it have a tolerance level established?
For the unregistered pesticides, those are the ones that require the F-PASSes. So there are two categories. There could be the canceled pesticides, which EPA and USDA and FDA already have their hazard studies. They already have their tolerance levels. For the never registered pesticides, EPA does not have any information on these pesticides. Does not have sufficient information.
Sat for days as a team trying to like really figure that, yeah, how do they know to detect it? I mean, we talked to FDA and
at the end we'll have a little more time to return to the other questions.
Sure. Well, so right now, there is a UN treaty called the Rotterdam Convention, which the U.S. has not signed yet. They would like to. So basically, this convention allows for the transfer of hazardous chemicals, but they need to be labeled. They need to have safety procedures. These things, it's already happening internationally. We just haven't signed on to that. That's why we're still using what the EPA would consider a very archaic method. But unfortunately, until we sign that, we still have to have certain measures to inform foreign governments. So hazardous materials are already being circulated. They have certain limits, but we're not part of that yet.
Thank you.